Now, back to Whateley.
But our Whateley's star, he got a half length of Bone Crusher. He's gone for the whip on Bone Crusher. Three lengths to Drought, followed then by Diggy Flyer and Drawn. But the two great New Zealanders have come away on the turn. Our Waverley star, a half-length Bone Crusher. The Big Red won't give in. Drought running on. Bone Crusher responds to the whip. The roars of the crowd. He races up to our Waverley star. 100 out. Bone Crusher, our Waverley star. Stride for stride. Nothing in it. Our Waverley star, the rails. Bone Crusher, the outside. And Bone Crusher races into equine immortality.
That is quintessential Cox Plate. It's my favourite race. I remember I would have been 12. We're watching it on a little telly next to the big wheel at the St. John Vianney's Fate. And from there, I've missed barely a Cox Plate since. Dad took me for the first time the following year, where I met Les Carline for the first time when Rubiton won. El Murad, I loved Colin Hayes. He won on my birthday. Better Loosen Up, that's probably my favourite in such a rich field. 92, Superimpose, in a race that had Better and it had Let's Elope and Naturalism ran an even money favourite. And then the years of Might and Power and Sunline and Northerly, which took us to the great tidal wave of Maccabi Diva down the side and the back-to-back wins of So You Think, the Quaddy of Winks. And in particular, when she trounced Hartnell in the year that we had it set up, it was going to be like Bone Crusher and our Waverley star, and she just made a mess of Hartnell that day. Extraordinary race. Clearly my favourite on the turf. Now, if you're anything like me at this time of year, I do dip in and out of a couple of books just to read the odd chapter here and there. Chasing a Dream is actually my favourite book. It's the one that Les Carline signed. He was in the Mitty's store at Moonee Valley, the first Cox Plate I went to. He signed that book. So True Grit is the collection. But Chasing a Dream is just there for me. And Chance is now part of that. Something you can dip in and out of. Tales of the Turf, the romance, the skullduggery. So Andrew Rule he's long taken up this mantle. He's written the Winks book, and it's always a great pleasure to have him on the show. Andrew, welcome back.
Jared, I needed a minute to recover from the crowd there. It's certainly one of the most moving sporting things I've ever heard, the Bone Crusher duel. It's up there with, Cathy Freeman and Lionel Rose winning his world title when I was a little kid. It's just phenomenal. Will we ever hear a crowd at a Melbourne race meeting like that again, that sort of intensity?
So, yes, any crowd would do at the moment, Andrew, wouldn't it? Any crowd would do. Hey, so what's the Cox Plate for you?
Well, it's the heavyweight clash, isn't it? It really is a heavyweight title fight. They're the best of the best. They're very good horses at their distance. You've got the horses that are extending out from being, sprinter milers. Can they get to 10 furlongs? And you've got the others coming back to it. So it really is that middle ground where the great horses meet that distance over that course. And over the, decades and decades, we've seen some wonderful horses win it. And by and large, not many bad ones win it, which is probably, I suspect it's a better record than the Melbourne Cup in some regards in that way.
Yep, I reckon you'd be right. So do you remember where you were, Bone Crusher, Waverley Star? Were you there?
I wasn't at the course that day. I watched it on television and rewatched it. And I've heard it a lot since, as you have. But it's just spine tingling. It's like watching one of the big Ali wins, the Rumble in the Jungle, or it's that good, I reckon. It's Seabiscuit and War Admiral. It's that sort of stuff.
Yeah. It is. There's a chapter in your book about the 1977 Cox Plate, so I'll set you up, Andrew, to relive Family of Man.
He's gone for the whip on Luskin Star. Family of Man has raced to the lead from Luskin Star, Vice Regal. Raffendale coming again, and they're followed then by Unaware, but Family of Man's in front, and Raffendale's running on well, but Family of Man causes a surprise. He's going to win by a half length to Raffendale. Vice Regal third.
What's the rule connection to Family of Man?
Well, look, I reckon he's one of the greatest racehorses in this country not to be called a champion. He set ultimately you know, he broke the record for stake money. He won races from, I think, 1,000 metres or 1,100 metres to a mile and a half and ran in the Melbourne Cup and ran midfield. I mean, he was a phenomenal racehorse. The real connection is that in 1974, my cousin John Rule, no longer with us, former, you know, heavyweight jockey, jumps jockey, very good horseman, small time but very good at it. He was setting up a new horse stud at Bairnsdale for owners, guys who own sawmills. And they said, we're going to stand a horse called Lots of Man, who came, it was an American horse, beautifully bred big horse, had never raced for various reasons, had been owned by Philippe Ismail, you know, the great punter. He yep. brought him in.
Yep.
Then he'd been rubbed out. This horse had never raced. He'd gone off and he stood up in some obscure place in New South Wales on a trotting stud. And my cousin John, setting up this new stud at Bairnsdale, said, I'm going to go and get this stallion and we'll stand him. I reckon he's going to be really good because he's wonderfully bred. And they obtained him. And then John heard that this horse, Lots of Man, had thrown a group of foals on a big property up at Nevertire in central New South Wales. And this is really broad acre country, big country with kangaroos and emus and all that. And he drove all the way up there with a horse float to this old bloke called Laurie Bartlett that was on a 5,000 acre property. And he said, you've bred three by Lots of Men. Yeah. Can I look at them? Yeah. So they go out to a 500 acre paddock and it's got nothing in it but a couple of brood mares and weanlings and emus and kangaroos. It's this massive paddock. And unlike most thoroughbreds in anywhere really, but in this country included, these young horses could gallop sort of, you know, nearly a mile in either direction. It was a big paddock.
Yep.
And they're out there and they got dust and burrs on them and they look wild and woolly and unkept. But the good weanling out of a mare called Colleen, he filled my cousin John's eye. He said, look at this horse. So he bought him, he bought his mother, Colleen, and he bought a couple of the others as well. It was he wrote a check out for probably 10 grand or something. This is 74, a year that the next year I earned $3,000, Jared. So that tells you what 10 grand was. So yes. Well, it wasn't nothing. It wasn't nothing. Anyway, he takes them to Bairnsdale on the strength that of this weanling, because he said, this is a beautiful weanling and I want to give him every chance to be good and to promote his sire. So he gets my aunt, Dorothy Rule, to break them in, the three young ones, including the good one.
Yep.
And she told me this horse, he said he was, everything he did right. He was quiet, he was sensible, he never did anything wrong. And as soon as you taught him something, he learnt it. She did a very good job of breaking him in. My cousin John got on him and rode him work the first week or so. And he said, this horse is a natural. He's one of the best horses I've ever put my leg over. And he said, he's too good for me to train here at Bairnsdale because I'm setting up a horse stud. I want to send him to one of the good trainers. And he said to the owners, he ought to go to George Hanlon or to, I think, Hutchinson. He was friendly with Hutchinson.
Yep.
And he goes to the horse sales and he sees Gary Hanlon, son of George. And he was a mate of Gary's. They used to ride together. And he said, Gary, I've got a great young horse here that I want your father to train. And Gary said, oh, yeah, knowing that his father probably wouldn't be interested in a horse from Bairnsdale. And 2 days later, John Rule turns up at George Hanlon's stables down at Epsom, unloads a float and backs this big young horse off it, big, bally-faced bay horse.
Yep.
And Gary says, what's this? And he said, I told you about it. I told you I was going to bring it down. And Gary said, oh, well, I haven't told that. So he grabs him and puts him in a loose box next to his picnic horses, because Gary trained a few picnic horses.
Yep.
And the true story of this is, George didn't even look at the horse for about a month.
Yep.
He didn't see him. And Gary kept riding him work, and he kept saying, Dad, you better come and look at his horse. He's pretty good. One day, George comes down and watches him work, and he never said a word. He leaned over, grabbed him by the head collar, and led him down to his end of the stable. And that is how George Hanlon came to train the best horse he ever trained.
That's brilliant. Out of the picnic boxes and down to the main stable. That's beautiful, Andrew. So 82, if you're my age, you grew up with a couple of VHSs, one of which was The King and the Man. So I have no recollection of 82 in real life, but it is so vivid from the repeated watchings of The King and the Man, and it culminates with the 82 Cox Plate.
Kingston Town can't win. Then L.A. Bijou and the three-year-old Grosvenor running on. My X-Men took the lead from Fearless Pride. Grosvenor coming down the outside is after them. My X-Men in front. Grosvenor and Kingston Town flashing. He might win yet the champ. Grosvenor took the lead. Oh, Kingston Town swapping them. What a run. Kingston Town wins it a neck to Grosvenor. My X-Men third, fourth Fearless
Pride. So a few years, well, many years later at the ABC, I found Greg Miles' call of the race, and at the exact same moment, he used the exact same line and said Kingston Town can't win in the ABC call.
Did he?
He did.
Is that right? Well, you can't blame him. He couldn't win. Only a super horse could win, and he was a super horse. I mean, it was a freakish thing, wasn't it?
It was. And that, so I guess that's the other quintessential Cox Plate, isn't it? So Bone Crusher, Waverly Star, and Kingston Town in 82.
I think you're right. Look, again, hear that crowd noise? Do you ever hear that sort of fever pitch? It was just, people were nearly hysterical with wonder, you know, that this could happen. It just brings the hairs up on the back of your neck to watch it. It's wonderful.
And
it's just a great heavyweight event. You know, it's Ali. It's just terrific.
And 86. So you talk about heavyweight slugging it out at the end and the mighty Saintly.
Yeah. Saintly.
And the whips are cracking. It's all our mob. Saintly, Juggler and Philande is a great go. 150 to go. Philande, Saintly coming at it on the outside. Saintly getting up to Philande and Juggler the centre. Saintly on the outside. Philande strikes back. Dead heat. Saintly may be a nose. Philande nothing in it.
What a stirring four-horse battle.
We forget how good Saintly was because he actually broke down, I think, as a four-year-old. He certainly broke down as an early five-year-old. I mean, we didn't see the best of him. If he'd gone on until he was five and six and maybe seven, I don't know what he would not have won. He was a phenomenal animal. He had a huge length of stride. He won a Cox Plate. He just went and won the Melbourne Cup. I don't think there's anything he couldn't have won had Bart set him for it at his peak. He was a beautiful horse. And you know, I wrote a story years later about So You Think, and I went to Flemington to watch them work in the morning, and they had the old Cox Plate horses there as a promotional thing. And Joe the track rider, Joe Agresta, he jumped on Saintly, who'd come in out of the paddock at 15 years of age. And they'd saddled him up, Joe gets on him, and he took him out, and he said, this old horse could nearly win a race still. He was just such a competitor. They were just amazed at him. He came out of the pack, his old horse, and he was still a bulldog. He was still competitive. His legs had sort of patched up and come good. And he said you could put him in training and win a race with him. He's just a freak. He was a freak. And, you know, so you think.
I could listen to your stories all day, Andrew. Thankfully, I've got Chance by the bedside at the moment to dip in and out of. It's great to chat ahead of the Cox Plate.
Thank you so much, Jared. I know you'd appreciate that sort of book, and and I think a lot of our friends out there do too. Thank you.
Good man. Andrew Rule, who's published Chance. I was 16 at the Bone Crusher Cox Plate, my first memorable race live. I had a tap beer with my grandfather and backed a winner, but the contest was something else. The next day, I taped the replay of the race off World of Sport VHS, of course. Luke taking us back. And Mark, I remember where I was for the Kingston Town Can't Win in the Orong Hotel with my dad. We just watched my brother get out in a district cricket game, St Kilda versus Paran. Sadly, they're both gone. That's from Croc. 0433 98 11 16 1300 736 736. Here's